Good afternoon and welcome to the Alameda County Board of Supervisors Personnel Administration and Legislation Committee for Monday, June the 30th, 2025. May I have a roll call, please?
Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Present.
Supervisor Tam.
Present. Thank you. Let's start with the federal legislative update, which I guess there's a marathon session of voting that's happening.
You're right. Good afternoon. Emily Bacque da Silva here with CJ Lake, and John Asini is here as well on the phone today. Yes, a lot finally happening in the Senate in terms of budget reconciliation. Congress was supposed to be in recess this week for the July 4th holiday, but the Senate remains in session as they continue consideration of the reconciliation package. The expectation is that the Senate will pass the bill either tonight or early tomorrow morning. It would then head over to the House. So the House is expected to return to session tomorrow and remain in session until it's able to vote on passage. You know, just a quick note in terms of the timeline, because, you know, this is kind of a self-imposed deadline by Republicans, and President Trump has said he wants the bill on his desk by this Friday, July 4th, because he wants to do a big signing ceremony. And it seems like they you know, could in fact hit that deadline. There's a lot of moving parts right now, but, you know, we've talked, you know, in our internal conversations with staff earlier today, and, you know, every time they've had a deadline this year, President Trump has been able to convince, you know, some of the holdouts to vote. And so, you know, it seems like he will be able to do that this time around as well. We're just kind of waiting to see how things unfold. But the Votorama in the Senate did begin this morning. The Senate version includes, of course, permanent extensions of the 2017 Trump tax cuts, phased rollbacks of clean energy credits, which the phase outs are sooner than what was initially included in the House, capped exemptions of overtime and tips, of course, the Medicaid work requirements, and additional Medicaid provisions that would reduce spending by approximately $1 trillion from the program. We do have kind of a high level summary that we will send out to you all with the PAL notes. You know, while much of the Medicaid language does in the Senate bill mirrors the House bill, the Senate version introduces a phased reduction in allowable provider taxes for ACA expansion states. Over the past week, and it's still ongoing, kind of the birdbath process has led to the removal of numerous provisions found to violate the reconciliation rules, including the initial language for the provider tax cap, Medicaid eligibility restrictions for undocumented immigrants, limitations on ACA subsidies for abortion-inclusive plans, and the elimination of funding for the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Additional measures related to SNAP eligibility, judicial review powers, and environmental permitting were also removed, and committees had to come back with kind of updated language. In response to internal pressure from Senate moderates, Senate Republicans introduced a $25 billion Rural Health Stabilization Fund and agreed to delay the provider tax reduction, maintaining the planned phase down to 3.5% in expansion states while softening the immediate impact. Senators Collins, of course, from Maine, Hawley from Missouri, and Tillis from North Carolina have publicly raised concerns over the adequacy of these offsets for vulnerable rural systems, even as kind of the broader Republican leadership remains committed to hitting the July 4th signing deadline. Amendments, lots of amendments have been filed to mitigate the harm to the clean energy tax credits, but that effort has faced opposition from House hardliners and the White House. Again, the Votorama has started. It's been kind of slow at this point. They've only voted on a handful of amendments. Over 500 amendments have been filed, ranging from Democratic efforts to strip out conservative provisions to the last minute Republican additions. If the Senate passes an amended package as I said, late Monday or late tonight or early tomorrow. House leadership is expected to issue a 48-hour vote notice for consideration this week. Again, there are a slew of amendments. There are a couple I want to mention. We just talked about the $25 billion Rural Health Stabilization Fund. And, you know, a number of moderates feel like it's not enough money. The original discussion draft had like $100 billion for this fund. Senator Collins does have an amendment that would double it. So it would go from 25 to 50 billion. I don't know if she's going to get a vote. Again, we're waiting to see. And then there's another amendment that I know you'll be interested in and you may have read about or heard about, but it's a Medicaid amendment by Rick Scott. And basically it would end the 90% federal cost share for Medicaid enrollees who are in expansion states, and it would go as low as 50%. Again, Senator Thune agreed to allow him to offer this amendment in order to get his vote for the motion to proceed on Saturday night. The talk is that they do not have the votes to pass this amendment because it would just it would be devastating to the program, and a number of mods in both the House and the Senate are objecting. So, you know, from everything we've heard from the chatter, there would be enough Senate Republicans to object to that amendment. I will pause there, John. I don't know if you want to kind of add anything around Medicaid or any of the other provisions.
I think the only thing that I would add is that they're also considering using what's called a wraparound amendment, which would essentially have a substantial changes that are not made kind of individually through the amendment process, but would be sort of a rewrite of the bill. They used this wraparound amendment during the Inflation Reduction Act. Democrats use this during the Inflation Reduction Act, so it has been done before, where it kind of operates in the same way as an amendment in Nature of the Substitute, where it's like a total rewrite. And some of the provisions that the House has been trying to push for, restoring some of the House language that they feel that the Senate went kind of too far on, could get agreed to in that way. So, you know, we're kind of keeping an eye out for progress on that. We know that Mr. Valadao, in particular, in addition to other House moderates, are considering or have put substantial pressure on Republicans in the Senate on the Medicaid side. But it kind of remains to be seen how successful they'll be because of the added pressure that those conservatives have been pushing to increase savings. Right now, the House conservatives are upset with the Senate Republicans because they believe that it disrupts the balance on savings versus spending. Because of the House parliamentarian, the number of savings or pay fors amounting to about $500 billion were stripped out of the package. And that's caused some heartache for the Republicans, and particularly in the Food Caucus. So, but happy to answer any sort of procedural questions or individual amendments or anything else that's on your mind.
And before that, I would just add, John made a really good point about the wraparound amendment. I mean, they are basically, House and Senate leadership are negotiating right now on changes because the idea is whatever the Senate passes ultimately is going to be what the House needs to pass, because if the House were to amend once it gets to them, the Senate would have to have another votorama, and it could take days. So they're trying to avoid that. They're trying to avoid a conference. So kind of by negotiating behind the scenes, they could come up with a deal that's palatable. They're hoping to get enough senators on board and House members on board that they can just pass this final bill with this wraparound amendment. So I'll stop there. And again, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Thanks for the update. Would you mind just reviewing again what's on the table regarding SNAP and food security?
Supervisor, I may need to pull it. I have it in my notes here, but I don't think I can get to it quickly enough.
Okay.
But it should be in the notes. We'll have what's included in the Senate bill as an attachment to our notes.
Thank you.
The big provision in the SNAP eligibility is it limits eligibility to U.S. citizens and essentially legal permanent residents. And then it also establishes a cost share program that allows states to choose either the FY25 or FY26 payment error rate to calculate their state match requirement that begins in fiscal year 2028. Beyond 2028, and the state match will be calculated using the payment error rate for the three fiscal years prior. And then if they exceed that payment rate, the state is be subject to a set percentage of the cost of SNAP benefits if it exceeds that rate. So it puts a little skin in the game from the part of the House or state governments. That's essentially in reaction to the increased payment rate post-COVID, because Republicans have found that after they increased the benefit cap for the SNAP program, and state governments were adamant about getting SNAP benefits out to as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, that error rate went up significantly. So they're trying to rein that back in. So that's the long and the short of it, but we'll, of course,
And to John's point, the state's share would be 15% of SNAP benefits if the payment error rate is 10% or more. That's kind of the high end. And then it goes down to 10% if the error rate's 8% to less than 10%, and then 5% if the error rate is 6% to less than 8%, and then 0% if the error rate is less than 6%.
Thank you. And one question regarding what's on the table for Medicaid. So Rick Scott's amendment aside is the proposal reducing the Medicaid match from 90 to 80%. Is that still what's on the table aside from the amendment?
No, so the 90 to 80%, that's in the event that a state covers undocumented immigrants under the program. The Scott Amendment would essentially undo the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid expansion FMAP for individuals that enroll after 2030. So right now, under current law, because of the Affordable Care Act, if you are a person that exceeds the federal poverty level of 137%, I think the number is at this point, the state share will be 10% and the federal share will be 90%. So this was like the substantial expansion of the Affordable Care Act beyond the individual exchange programs. His amendment would return all individuals that enroll in the program, the share would be down to the state FMAP share. So in the state of California, we have a 50-50 share for traditional Medicaid patients, beneficiaries rather. In other states, it varies like 70-30. It just kind of depends on a couple different factors. So if agreed to, the Scott Amendment would be a significant rollback of the Affordable Care Act. I mean, it's basically repealed without saying repeal at that point, because the Medicaid expansion was the lion's share of individuals getting care.
I'm going to go with Emily's assessment and count on the fact that there may not be enough votes for Senator Scott's amendment.
I would agree with Emily's assessment. There are a number of Republican senators that have internally lobbied against the amendment. I think this is more of a show for Mr. Scott to indicate kind of his overall position on it, knowing full well that it will fail. There's things that the leadership can do to raise points of order to increase the threshold from a 51-vote majority for it to get adopted to a 60-vote majority. So this is the kind of process that they use to have a show vote, basically. So I anticipate that if it does get brought up for a vote, it will be under the 60-vote threshold mark, not the 51 threshold mark.
Thank you for that clarification. So obviously not very enlightening news, but I think what I'm hearing is there's a high likelihood that there's going to be every effort to make a signing ceremony on Friday, the 4th of July, including accommodations, hopefully, to Senator Collins' amendments, because she and Senator Hawley are the two Republicans that voted to advance, but their votes are critical, along with, in case there's a tie, I understand that Vice President Vance is on standby.
That's right. I mean, I don't want to give too much credence to that. I honestly don't know if her amendment that would double the Rural Stabilization Fund, I don't know that that will pass, honestly. I mean, right now there's $25 billion in there that was included because of Senator Collins. I think it's going to be tough to get another $25 billion in there, quite frankly. I feel like it's been such a long week. When they initially released the text, I want to say it was Thursday or Friday, I can't remember, that stabilization fund was only $15 billion. And then over the weekend, it increased to $25 billion. I have a hard time seeing them doubling it. We'll see, but I think that could be a stretch. We'll see if she gets her vote. John, I don't know if you have thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I think that the increase to $50 billion is not going to happen. And I don't think that that prevents either of them from voting for the overall package in the end. It was clear that Senator Collins, I mean, despite her rhetoric saying that she wasn't going to vote for the final package, but it's pretty rare for a senator to vote for a motion to proceed without also voting for the final bill. You know, they've been working with her hand in glove on some of these provisions that she cares about. The Rural Provider Fund was something that she had the pen on in the first place. So she's kind of negotiating for the finer points of the package. I think that Senator Hawley had a provision that was included in the judiciary section on RICO, which has to do with radiation exposure, which is something that he has been pushing for very hard in nearly every vehicle that was getting out of the Senate. So they basically got his vote by including the RICO provision in the judiciary package. So any sort of additional action that he does on Medicaid is kind of besides the fact, because they know that his number one priority was taken care of a couple weeks ago at this point. So to Emily's point, I just don't see the price tag going up by $25 billion without trying to find a $25 billion pay for, which there are few and far in between, because so many were pulled out during the bird process, the bird bath.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments online from the public on the federal update?
No speakers for item one.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both for your updates. Let's move to the state legislation and the legislative update from Amy from Full Moon Strategies.
Good afternoon, supervisors. Amy Costa with Full Moon Strategies. We have our own version of a Votorama happening in Sacramento that began last week. As I'm sure you've read, California legislative leaders and the governor have reached a three-party agreement on the 25-26 state budget. I will say it's been a very unique deal in that it wasn't broadcast very widely by press release, as is kind of the normal convention, in part because the entirety of the state budget deal hinges on the passage of one last-minute housing trailer bill, AB or SB 131. It's being heard right now in the Senate Budget Committee and will run through the rest of the legislative process this week. The bill contains some pretty sweeping changes to the California Environmental Quality Act, known as CEQA, aimed at fast-tracking housing construction and certain wildfire mitigation and water infrastructure projects.
The governor has insisted upon these specific changes to address the state's worsening housing affordability crisis and calling them foundational to the broader budget framework. This bill also contains language that establishes round 7 of the Homelessness Housing Assistance and Prevention Program, HAHAP, as well as a $500 million appropriation for that program, which would begin in July of 2026, making the appropriation contingent on future legislation requiring compliant housing elements, local encampment policies, and some pro-housing designations. Late last week, there was another controversial trailer bill related to housing, ABSB 130, that included a minimum wage requirement for workers on certain residential projects, which was inserted at the governor's urging. The proposal sparked sharp opposition from construction trade unions, leading to its removal after several tense budget hearings last week. New compromise language was negotiated and has since been amended into the bill as is in print. In general, the final budget reflects legislative efforts to soften some of the governor's proposed cuts to the Medi-Cal program by tapping quite heavily into the state's reserves and using some internal borrowing. However, I would note the approach regarding the CEQA legislation is really unprecedented and quite unique, in which there is a control section in the Budget Act that says the entirety of the Budget Act would be voided if the governor were to not sign the CEQA legislation. And that was quite a bit of debate in Senate committee this morning on that particular provision. In our report, we will have a list of all of the bills that on Friday the governor signed as the first tranche of the budget proposals. There are 4 other measures being debated today, and they will be acted on likely this week. And as I said, they're meeting in the Senate Budget Committee as we speak right now. We'll also be including some other resources from some of our sister county agencies, including CSAC and the Urban County Caucus review of the enacted budget. We also have a rundown of several of the budget requests that were approved by the PAL committee, as well as the full board, and kind of how that was dispensed with in the final budget act. We'll have updates on the MyCalVax, the California Vaccine Management System, the future of public health, the California Children's Services Monitoring and Oversight Initiative, the Medi-Cal Medically Supportive Food and Nutrition Advisory Work Group, as well as the CalWORKs single allocation funding, as well as the in-home supportive services administrative rebase funding, funding for diaper banks, as well as the family urgent response system. Speaking of in-home supportive services, the IHSS collective bargaining provisions in the budget bill would preserve local level collective bargaining for at least the next 5 years while laying the groundwork for a possible transition to a statewide model. The bill would require the California Department of Human Resources, in collaboration with the California Department of Social Services, to appoint a statewide bargaining advisory committee. The committee will be responsible for analyzing the full cost of care under a statewide IHSS bargaining model and must submit reports to the legislature between January 2027 and January 2029. Additionally, the State Department of Social Services is required to submit a cost containment report by July of 2027 to help policymakers be informed of the decisions. To support this planning process, the enacted budget includes $3.3 million for CalHR to enter into an interagency agreement with the Department of Social Services and hire necessary personnel to support this work. We would note, however, that this funding is made contingent upon the enactment of AB 283 by Assemblymember Haney or a similar measure that includes the appropriate budget appropriation. We also saw, in anticipation of the federal act, the feds acting, that the governor held a press conference late last week on what he's calling Trump's big ugly bill. He forcefully condemned the administration's proposed federal budget and what healthcare changes, referring to them as a betrayal of vulnerable Californians. He's warned that the proposed work requirements for Medi-Cal and CalFresh would strip vital services for millions, especially low-income individuals, children, older adults, and people with disabilities. Rather than promoting employment, Newsom argued that these requirements are designed to create bureaucratic barriers, citing failed attempts in other states, such as Arkansas. He noted these changes could push hundreds of thousands off Medi-Cal, even if they remain eligible, and would threaten the state's ability to fund its healthcare safety net, particularly through the elimination of managed care provider taxes that draw billions in federal matching funds. He also raised alarm about the broader public health and social consequences of the federal proposals, including their potential impact on services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and undocumented residents. He warned that penalties like the reductions in the FMAP and restrictions on data privacy could severely damage trust in public programs and discourage vulnerable populations. Additionally, he addressed concerns during the Q&A portion of the press conference about Proposition 36 implementation, cautioning that increased incarceration costs and funding redirection for Proposition 47 programs could undermine the criminal justice reform programs. We have a number of bills that are coming up as the legislature deals with the budget. Obviously, they're going to be hearing their policy committee bills as well. We note in our report that AB 470, which was the Telephone Corporation's carrier of last resort, was significantly amended in a way favorable to the county. And you have an item on today's agenda regarding SB 16, known as the Ending Street Homelessness Act, that was significantly amended last week. Our county-sponsored bill, SB 617, has been set for hearing on Wednesday, July 9th. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for a very comprehensive report. Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
I don't think I have any questions per se. Look forward to the written report and working together with our administration and department heads to assess what the impact is. Thank you. Regarding this last pending trailer bill, is there an assessment of what will happen with it?
Well, today, Supervisor Weiner, the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, noted that it was part of the three-party agreement. So I think most people are assuming that it will go forward, it will be part of the package, and the control section that would void the budget will not be enacted because it will be passed forward to the governor for his signature.
Thank you. And what's the status of the minimum wage that was recently proposed? What's that language?
So that language has been amended out after some pretty forceful opposition by the building trades in last week's committee hearings. A new bill emerged on Friday or Saturday that amended out the provisions that the building trades had the biggest issues with.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to make an observation that the $500 million in HAP funding that would be, that's sort of being put together, that's for the entire state. In Alameda County alone, we just adopted a budget that included $200 million in our existing budget. And we had designated about $400 million in Measure W back in December. And that's just for Alameda County, which is more than the HAP funding. So it seems like even that is being tinkered around with the proposal under SB 16. So were there amendments that occurred that would change our position, or we are still following the Urban County's directive to oppose SB 16?
Yeah, two things I'll note on that, Supervisor. You're absolutely right on the funding for HAP. I think the other thing I would note is it continues to be one-time funding. And I think local jurisdictions have long sought to have it be ongoing funding, given the need to fund these programs for homelessness. And the other issue with it is that this is funding for July of 2026. So it also creates a gap in the funding of this particular program. It's unclear whether or not SB 16 will be kind of the legislation that's referenced in the appropriation. And you can see on the Pell report, I think some of the amendments we view as kind of bringing this bill backwards when we originally opposed it and creating some unfunded mandates for locals. And so we definitely have concerns. Urban County Caucus, to your note, has gone on a oppose unless amended. The bill is set to be heard on Wednesday.
Okay, thank you for that update on that bill. As Amy mentioned, we do have a request from actually Supervisor Miley's office to remove our opposition to AB 470, which has been amended so that we are in a position to support it for the telephone corporation's carriers of last resort. And as we discussed, there's a recommendation from Alameda County Health to oppose Senate Bill 16 with Catherine Blakesmore bill on ending Street Homelessness Act that imposes a lot of unfunded mandates on the county and prioritizes interim housing over permanent housing in our housing element. Do we have concurrence on moving those recommendations to the full board? And I see a nod from Supervisor Fortunato Bass.
Yes, thank
you. Are there any public comments or questions on the state legislative update and recommendations?
I have no speakers for item two.
Okay, thank you very much, Amy, for that update. Do we have any public comment on items that are not on today's agenda?
I have no speakers for public comment.
Okay. Well, those online, identify themselves, and thank you for your participation.
Good afternoon, Valerie Arkin from Supervisor Miley's office.
Good afternoon, Jessica Blakemore, Alameda County Health.
Hello, this is Leon Fernando, Alameda County Child Support Services.
This is Elvi Quiroga, Alameda County Treasurer Tax Collector's Office.
Thank you very much for your participation and your updates today. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.